Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankford. Welcome you to the April 11th edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the lines to you, our listeners. While numerous progressive commentators have lambasted the recent 5-4 Supreme Court ruling that prison officials may strip search anyone arrested, even for the most minor offenses, what has generally been overlooked is that the Roberts Court had the backing of the Obama administration in reaching its decision. Is this the latest successful inroad into our civil liberties that America has experienced since the election of President Obama, who has followed without apparent hesitation or apology a path that began under the Bush administration with the Patriot Act? In the meantime, Obama has shown himself to be as dismissive of international law as his predecessor, and one might argue, even though he has yet to launch his own major war, he has gone further than Bush in expanding America's global empire at the expense of the sovereignty of other nations. To talk about those subjects, I've asked the renowned international law professor Francis Boyle to join us at about 20 minutes past the hour from his office at the University of Illinois Champaign. This all has a bearing on how U.S. foreign policy will be expressed and resisted domestically as well as abroad, where two new wars are well within the realm of possibility. In Syria, where the efforts of foreign UN General Secretary Kofi Annan to secure a ceasefire between the government of Bashar Assad and the Western and Saudi-backed rebels, due to go into effect tomorrow, seems to be coming apart. Leading U.S. hawks are ready to shed blood, that of others, of course, not their own. As Alex Perrine writes on Salon.com, quote, "When John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and Joe Lieberman join forces, you can be sure of one thing. It will involve state-sponsored violence. Today they want us to arm Syrian rebels, though you know what they really wanted to call for was actually bombing the hell out of Syria until there's freedom. They're just taking it slow." And the Senate's three most predictable and least credible warmongering moderates, he writes, frequently join forces to publish joint op-eds or hold press conferences, and the one thing they always invariably want is for the United States to have just a little bit more war than it currently has, somewhere far away, end quote. I'm not aware of what happened to Graham, but the war criminal McCain and the warmonger Lieberman are on a surprise trip to the Turkish-Syrian border, where they have been meeting with leaders of the Free Syria Army and visiting Syrian refugees. The senators claim, quote, that Assad has used the time provided by the recent diplomatic initiative to kill up to 1,000 additional men, women, and children in Syria. And just yesterday, they said, Syrian forces fired across the border with Turkey, killing and wounding people in a refugee camp on Turkish territory, end quote. They repeated their demand for arming Syrian rebels, as they had called for in a congressional resolution earlier this month, and for Washington to increase its activities to protect the Syrian people. Quote, "If America still stands for the cause of oppressed people who are fighting for their freedom and justice and deliverance from tyranny," they said, "we cannot abandon the people of Syria," end quote. What the senators, of course, failed to say regarding the incident on the Turkish border is, as Patrick Coburn points out in The Independent, this occurred after anti-government forces had attacked a Syrian government checkpoint near the frontier, killing 6 Syrian soldiers, and who were then shot at as they retreated across the frontier with bullets hitting dwellings in a nearby refugee camp. This, as Coburn notes, is what is making it so difficult for Kofi Annan to succeed in his mission. The Syrian government has demanded guarantees from the militia men it is fighting that they will abide by a ceasefire. That's unlikely to happen, he writes, given the total distrust between the two sides and with the insurgents fearful of risking torture and execution. Meanwhile, the successors to the Project for a New American Century, or PNAC, the foreign policy initiative headed by William Kristol, and the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, both institutions of the neocon pro-Israel establishment that brought us the Iraq War and, you may recall, hungered for a Pearl Harbor-like attack that would justify it, yesterday issued a joint bulletin entitled, "What Obama Must Do in Syria After the Failed Annan Plan." It called on the U.S. to do 3 things. First, intensify direct contact with the Free Syrian Army and associated forces and provide them with a full range of assistance, including self-defense aid. Second, to establish safe zones for civilians within Syrian territory. And finally, use limited Limited, retaliatory airstrikes against select Syrian military targets in order to protect the safe zones, end quote. In other words, launch a war with Syria. What is curious is that our alternative media seems to pay little attention to the Foreign Policy Initiative and to the Foundation for Defensive Democracies as it did to PNAC before 9/11 and the run-up to the war in Iraq. And while their party is no longer in the White House, its influence over Congress has arguably grown only stronger. William Kristol was one of the founders of the Project for New American Century. He also chairs the Emergency Committee for Israel that has run ads and put up billboards in the last election season, as well as this one, targeting enemies of Israel, which for them include President Obama. If the mainstream media wasn't under the thumb of the pro-Israel establishment, you might have read or heard that Noah Pollack, the executive director of the Emergency Committee for Israel, had sent a tweet about the Global March of Jerusalem that I announced on my last program, in which he wrote, quote, "Global March of Jerusalem needs a more accurate name, like Global March, to become target practice for the IDF," end quote, the IDF being the Israel Defense Forces. He had earlier sent tweets which called for, quote-unquote, disproportionate force against Palestinians and for shooting Palestinian prisoners released in exchange for captured Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit. That was mild, however, compared with what was proposed by Rachel Adams, wife of celebrated neocon Elliot Abrams, who is an ECI board member. After Israel finishes celebrating the release of Shalit, she wrote on her web blog, appropriately titled Bad Rachel, they should, quote, round up his captors, the slaughtering, death-worshipping, innocent, butchering, child-sacrificing savages who dip their hands in blood, and throw them not into your prisons, where they can bide till they're traded by the thousands for another child of Israel, but into the sea to float there, food for sharks, stargazers, and whatever other oceanic carnivores God has put there for that purpose, end quote. Those are the words of Rachel Abrams, wife of Council for Foreign Relations fellow Elliot Abrams, and a board member of the Emergency Committee for Israel. Curious, is it not, that despite the coverage of the activities of the Emergency Committee in the mainstream media and the exposure in the media of embarrassing Twitter feeds and blog comments on a variety of subjects, those of Pollack and Rachel Abrams have been largely ignored. On the Iranian front, the hawkish Ron Ben-Yeshi, a well-respected military correspondent for Yedit Ahronot, has attacked the U.S. in an article headlined, quote, U.S. thwarting an Israeli attack on Iran, suggesting that the U.S. is carrying out, quote-unquote, target assassinations on Israel's war plans. Let's hear him tell it as it is. An obviously angry Ben-Yeshi writes, quote, the United States is leaking information to the media in order to avert an Israeli strike in Iran. The U.S. administration recently shifted into high gear in its efforts to avert an Israeli strike on Iran's nuclear facilities by the end of the year. The flood of reports in the American media in recent weeks attest not only to the genuine U.S. fear that Israel intends to realize its threats, moreover, it indicates the Obama administration has decided to take its gloves off. Indeed, in recent weeks, writes Ben-Yeshi, the administration shifted from persuasion efforts vis-a-vis decision makers in Israel's public opinion to a practical targeted assassination of potential Israeli operations in Iran. This quote-unquote surgical strike is undertaken via reports in the American and British media, but the campaign's aims are fully operational, to make it more difficult for Israeli decision makers to order the IDF to carry out a strike, and what's even graver, to erode the IDF's capacity to launch such strike with minimum casualties. The first and most important American objective, he says, is to eliminate potential operational options available to the IDF and the State of Israel. I have no intention of detailing or even hinting to the options which the U.S. government aims to eliminate by exposing them in the media, writes Ben-Yeshi, but a large part of the reports stem from false information or disinformation, and there is no reason to reveal to the Iranians what's real and what isn't. However, he goes on, it is blatantly clear The reports in the past week alone have caused Israel substantive diplomatic damage and possibly even military and operational damage, end quote. That's Ron Ben-Yeshe and Yedioth Ahronot of March 29th. One of the instances he is referring to, obviously, is a revelation by Mark Perry in Foreign Policy magazine the day before of Israel's close relationship with Iran's northern neighbor, Azerbaijan. Referring to a cable released in 2009 by WikiLeaks that quotes Azerbaijan's president Ilham Aliyev as describing his country's relationship with the Jewish state as an iceberg, quote, 9/10 of it's below the surface, end quote, Perry notes that, quote, according to several high-level sources I've spoken with inside the U.S. government, Obama administration officials now believe that the submerged aspect of the Israeli-Azerbaijani alliance, security cooperation between the two countries, is heightening the risk of an Israeli strike on Iran. In particular, four senior diplomats and military intelligence officers say that the United States has concluded that Israel has recently been granted access to air bases on Iran's northern border. To do what exactly is not clear. The Israelis have bought an airfield, a senior administration official told me, that is Perry, in early February, writes Perry, and the airfield is called Azerbaijan. Senior U.S. intelligence officials, he goes on, are increasingly concerned that Israel's military expansion into Azerbaijan complicates U.S. efforts to dampen Israeli-Iranian tensions, according to the sources. Military planners, I was told, continues Perry, must now plan not only for a war scenario that includes the Persian Gulf, but one that could include the Caucasus. The burgeoning Israeli-Azerbaijan relationship has also become a flashpoint in both countries' relationship with Turkey, a regional heavyweight that fears the economic and political fallout of a war with Iran. Turkey's most senior government officials have raised their concern with their U.S. counterparts as well as with the Azeris, the sources said. While the Azeris insist they will not allow an attack to be carried out from their country against Iran, what the Israelis are presumably looking for is a place for its bases to land when and if it chooses to launch a bombing raid on Iran's nuclear sites, and from where helicopters might take off to rescue Israeli pilots who may be downed by Iranian anti-aircraft fire. That's Iran. Now, changing subjects, as you may have heard on Democracy Now!'s headlines on Monday, Günter Grass, the Nobel Prize-winning German author, has made news and new enemies lately over a poem he wrote criticizing Germany for providing submarines to Israel capable of launching nuclear missiles and calling for Israel to be held accountable for its nuclear weapons, a subject he notes that the world refuses to talk about. As could have been expected, the poem entitled, quote, What Must Be Said, drew sharp criticism in Germany, Israel, and from Jewish organizations. Typically, the Israeli embassy in Germany said the poem was in line with a, quote, traditional blood libel ahead of Passover, while others were quick to note that, after all, Grass had been enrolled in the Waffen-SS during World War II at the tender age of 17, something he had not revealed until 2006. Dealing with the issues he raised was not on their agenda. For those who have not had a chance to read or hear it, I've elected to read a translation of Grass's controversial poem, What Must Be Said. Here it is. Why do I stay silent, conceal for too long what is obvious and has been practiced in war games, at the end of which we as survivors are, at best, footnotes? It is the alleged right to the first strike that could annihilate the Iranian people, subjugated by a loudmouth and guided to organized jubilation. Because in their sphere of power, it is suspected a nuclear bomb is being built. Yet, why do I forbid myself to name that other country in which for years, even if secretly, there has been a growing nuclear potential at hand, but beyond control, because not accessible to inspections? The universal concealment of these facts, to which my silence subordinated itself, I sense as an incriminating lie, and coercion, the punishment is promised as soon as it is ignored. The verdict of anti-Semitism is familiar. Now, though, because in my country, which time and again has sought and confronted its very own crimes that are without comparison, in turn on a purely commercial basis, if also with nimble lips calling it a reparation, declares a further U-boat should be delivered to Israel. whose specialty consists of guiding all destroying warheads to where the existence of a single atomic bomb is unproven. But fear wishes to be of conclusive evidence, I say what must be said. But why have I stayed silent until now? Because I thought my origin, afflicted by a stain never to be expunged, forbade this fact as pronounced truth to be told to the nation of Israel, to which I am bound and wish to stay bound. Why do I say only now, aged with my last ink, the nuclear power Israel endangers the already fragile world peace? Because it must be said, what even tomorrow may be too late to say. Also because we as Germans burdened enough could become suppliers to a crime that is foreseeable, whereas our complicity could not be redeemed through any of the usual excuses. And granted, I am silent no longer because I am tired of the West's hypocrisy in addition to which it is to be hoped that this will free many from silence, appeal to the perpetrator of the recognizable danger to renounce violence, and, likewise, insist to that an unhindered and permanent control of the Israeli nuclear potential and the Iranian nuclear sites be authorized through an international agency by the governments of both countries. Only this way are all the Israelis and Palestinians, even more, all people that in this region occupied by mania, living cheek by jowl among enemies, and also us, to be helped. End quote. Those are the words of Günter Grass, the winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1996. President Obama, the Nobel Peace Prize winner of 2008, cannot even bring himself to admit publicly that Israel possesses nuclear weapons. And yet he is ready with all kinds of tough preconditions to force upon Iran in the upcoming negotiations on Iran's nuclear program that are scheduled to begin in Istanbul on April 14th. Finally, the Ukiah Planning Commission, which last month refused to approve the proposed expansion of the currently existing Walmart store into a 24/7 supermarket, will officially vote on a resolution rejecting the Walmart project at tonight's meeting of the Planning Commission at 300 Seminary Avenue, beginning at 6 p.m. sharp. There will be time for public comment before the vote.